Hey y'all, it's Rachel from Smarter Teaching, here to share a latte and give you all the tools you'll need to work smarter, not harder, in your classroom.
Hey teachers, welcome back. Today I want to talk to you about teaching one of my favorite subjects, math. Now, when I was a student, I hated math. I got the message early on in elementary school that I just wasn't good at it, and it was a miserable fight for me all throughout school. I remember crying when I was a little kid doing homework in elementary school. I remember when I was in high school and I had to take chemistry and pre-calculus in the same year and I was working my booty off for like just average grades. I remember when I was in college and I took the only math class I was required to take pass fail because I wasn't willing to tank my whole GPA over this one math class that I had to take. But all of these struggles definitely motivated me as a math teacher. And today I want to talk to you about how we can use complex problem solving in math to boost our kids' confidence and to boost their critical thinking. So right now you're probably wondering, what is complex problem solving? A few years ago, guided math got really trendy. Teachers were really interested in trying it out. There were books and resources on Teachers Pay Teachers and on Amazon. And you kind of couldn't really turn around as an elementary teacher without running into someone talking about guided math, someone saying they wanted to try out guided math, or reading about guided math. Complex problem solving has never been as trendy as guided math, but if you're doing it correctly, it can honestly be more impactful to more students simultaneously than guided math, because it's something that students all work on together, more like a readers or writers workshop in the sense where all the kids are working at the same time and you're circulating to support with conferring. The basic way that complex problem solving is different from traditional problem solving, or maybe say something like guided math, is that it's complex, which sounds like a terrible answer. But what I mean in this situation is that complex doesn't necessarily denote that it's harder for students, but that what they're required to do is show a much deeper understanding. So in complex tasks, kids are really showing that they understand the why or the how of the content they're working on. So one thing that's super important when you're doing complex problem solving is that you would never lead with this type of task or this type of problem when you're introducing new content, because students need to have kind of a foundation of knowledge that they can apply. So they can't start a complex task when they're first learning about a new content area. They need, probably depending on the grade level and the content and the complexity, they probably, I would say, need 1 to 3 days of instruction before they really have a foundation strong enough for them to tackle these complex tasks where they're applying what they know and they're really showing that they understand why and or how this math content area works. So when you're using complex tasks or complex problems in your classroom, there are a few features that will be true regardless of grade level, regardless of specific content. Generally, complex problems have multiple answers, multiple points of entry, and multiple solution paths. So if we think about some examples, these are all going to be like kindergarten and first grade examples because those are the grades that I usually teach. So if you think that in first grade, students are asked to know that you can add and subtract within 10, and that there are multiple ways to make 10, a traditional word problem might read something like, John scored 5 points during his basketball game. Joey scored 3 points during the basketball game. How many points did both boys score? Students are reading the problem. They're understanding they need to combine 5 and 3. They're adding it, maybe drawing a picture. That's kind of the end. There's one solution. There's one way to solve it. I mean, you could draw a picture. You could use multiple ideas, but there's really one solution, which is to add 5 and 3. And that's the extent of it. a complex task around the same math standard might say something like, John scored 10 points in his basketball game altogether. How many points did he score in the first half? And how many points did he score in the second half? So students are still showing that they understand there's multiple ways to make 10, but instead of only coming up with one way, they need to show multiple ways to make 10. And they're probably drawing multiple pictures or using manipulatives to help them solve potentially a little faster than drawing pictures. But there's going to be multiple answers. There's going to be multiple solution paths as well. You could also ask students, when we did our place value unit, one of our tasks towards the end of the unit was around a box of markers. We would just like pick a student's name and say that so-and-so has a box of 16 markers and ask students to show what the one means and to show what the six means, because that's like having students demonstrate that they really understand place value and that they understand the difference between digits and numbers. And so obviously in kindergarten and first grade, you get a lot of students who want to draw a one and then a six, and then they think that they're finished. And they often cognitively know that that's not correct, because they totally count seven. And it kind of takes them a while to get that to that point where they can understand that the one really is standing for a group of 10, and to push them to that knowledge. In this situation, there's obviously only one answer, but there are still multiple points of entry and multiple solution paths. And another task that we used to do a lot on our fractions unit was about baking cupcakes. We would, again, pick just a student's name. We would say, so-and-so baked 12 cupcakes. Half of the cupcakes are chocolate and half of the cupcakes are vanilla. How many cupcakes are vanilla, or how many cupcakes are chocolate? It doesn't really matter. But again, in this one, there also, again, is only one answer, but there are multiple ways that students can attack this problem, and there are multiple solution paths that they could take that would lead them to the right answer. So when we're doing complex tasks, students are really showing the depth of their knowledge. They're working honestly for a long time. When I was teaching kindergarten and first grade, we would routinely work on one task like this for close to 30 minutes. And they're really showing a real depth of knowledge. It's not superficial. It takes a long time, and it is not something they can do until they have that base of knowledge. So I kind of alluded to this earlier, but we're going to talk now about how it would really work to use complex tasks in a classroom. So one thing is that we need to build stamina before we can do this. And I'm not suggesting that you would give them a task the very first time and have them work for 30 minutes. That's obviously unrealistic. So you'll build up to that amount of time. But once your students are familiar with working on tasks and solving complex problems, it won't be unreasonable for them to work for 30 minutes, or perhaps even longer if they're in older grades. Secondly, I almost always have students work with partners when we're doing tasks like this. And I usually make the partners, although sometimes I will randomly group them using like pool pencils or name sticks or something like that. But most of the time I deliberately group them. And that's mainly so that especially when they're first starting out with these complex tasks, that they don't feel like they're so hard they can't solve them. And so a lot of times working with another student can help them brainstorm ideas together. It can help them if they're both kind of in the right ballpark but not exactly on the path. Sometimes talking to another student can help them refine their ideas so that they can come up with a plan of attack together. So partners are not essential, but very important, especially at the beginning when kids are still building their stamina and building their confidence in these complex tasks. The third piece is that this generally functions like a workshop, which I talked about a little bit earlier, but this is going to be more kind of similar to Readers or Writers Workshop, where you're having a small chunk of instruction at the beginning. You are reading the task, making sure students understand what their job is, because you definitely don't want kids working for 15 to 20 minutes and then realizing they were working on the wrong thing, right? You want everyone to be clear on what the question is, what the goal is for their time. So you're starting with a small amount of teaching at the beginning, probably in lower grades, I'd say in K to 2, probably no more than 8 minutes. And then they're working. And while they're working, you're walking around, you're talking to students, asking them what's working, asking them what's challenging for them, just kind of noting what different students are doing. If anyone has a really unique solution that you might want to draw attention to, you're probably jotting that down. And I would also suggest that you're making sure to check in with your struggling students within the first 5 minutes or so, so that they're not just kind of sitting there looking out the window and then trying to come up with a solution towards the end. And then at the end, after the work time, you come back together. You might ask one or two students to share that you have selected, not necessarily on a volunteer basis. You are asking students before to then share out at the end to talk about how they got the answer. And one thing that we always emphasized was that it's nice to get the right answer, but it's more important to be able to talk about how you got that answer. So we would always say like, oh, great job. If you got this right answer, you know, like kiss your brain or give yourself a hug or whatever. But what's more important is that you can talk about how you got the answer. So then taking, again, maybe like 5 to 8, definitely not more than 10 minutes at the end to talk about maybe one or two solutions that would work and what the correct answer is and how you get the correct answer, but more importantly, why that answer is the correct answer. And then another piece of this type of problem solving is that when students first start, especially when they first start in younger grades, that they'll be at the very beginning of what's the math continuum. So this problem solving continuum has three pieces. It's concrete, pictorial, and abstract. So when most students, especially early childhood students, early elementary students, are starting in concrete. So what that means basically is that when they're solving math problems, they need physical objects to solve the math problem. So it doesn't 100% have to be pencils if their problem is about pencils, but it does need to be chips, like those clear or colored plastic chips, or counters, or if they're solving a problem about place value, they need base 10 blocks. Or they need the stacking cubes. So when students are in the concrete piece of this continuum, they physically need concrete objects to manipulate to solve the problem. And it's also important to know, as frustrating as this is, obviously not all students are going to be progressing through this continuum at the same speed. So, and they will also not be in the same part of the continuum for every different content area. The second part of the continuum beyond concrete is pictorial. So pictorial is pretty clear. It's when you can substitute drawing a picture for the physical objects. So if you have 12 cupcakes, you don't necessarily need 12 physical things to touch. You can draw 12 circles on your paper. You could draw 12 dots on your paper. You could draw 12 cupcakes on your paper. And you can know that those things on your paper stand for the items in your math problem. And then students will obviously progress within the pictorial phase, right? So at the beginning, you might physically draw 12 rainbows, 12 cupcakes, 12 shoelaces, whatever. And then as students develop their understanding, they can use check marks, circles, triangles, whatever, to stand for the real object so that they're not losing so much time drawing. And then the highest level of the continuum is abstract, which means they don't necessarily need to draw a picture anymore. So these would be math strategies like counting on, where you start from one number and keep going, where you can count on your fingers. You're not necessarily needing any longer to have either physical objects to count or to draw a picture to solve the problem. So students will need, especially in younger grades, to have actual tools or manipulatives available for them when they're solving these problems. So you want to have students working with a partner. You want to have tools or manipulatives available for them. You want to be blocking out 30 to 45 minutes of time for this, including time spent launching, working, and then debriefing at the end. And you're wanting to make sure students are working with partners. When I was teaching, I was using complex problems at least once a week, if not more often than that. Especially as we got deeper into a math unit, we would solve more tasks than earlier in the unit. So it's clear when we're asking students to apply this knowledge and to go deep that we're building their critical thinking. It's especially true when we ask them to find errors, when we ask them to compare solutions. They are using a lot of critical thinking skills when they're solving complex tasks. And it also builds their confidence, not just in math, but also in school overall, because it's a task that they get with multiple points of entry and multiple solutions. So students who might think of themselves as not necessarily a great student can still access a task, can still solve it, can still actively participate, whereas other school-based tasks or other school-based activities might be a little challenging for them. So they're building their math confidence, they're building their classroom confidence. Another way that they're able to build their confidence is when they're asked to share because they've found a very unique solution to the task. So using complex tasks really pushes kids deep in their critical thinking. It pushes them deep in their knowledge, and it helps them build confidence from the highest student, like your top students in the class, who probably already feel okay to positive about themselves and school. But it's also helping build the confidence of your students who might be struggling, who probably aren't feeling as great about themselves or their place within their classroom, by giving them multiple points of entry, by giving them multiple solution paths, and giving them a way to feel more validated because there's not just one correct solution. So if you have not tried a complex task in your math classroom yet, I would really suggest that you give it a try. I've given you some ideas in this podcast. You can probably find a few more around Googling. If you have the book Putting the Practices into Action, it's a Heinemann book. There isn't necessarily any specific tasks listed in that book, but you will find a lot of good general math activities for critical thinking. And then finally, as a shameless plug, I have available in my Teachers Pay Teachers store, which you can link to through my profile. If I have several task bundles for different math standards for first grade. So if you're a first grade teacher, I can help you out. Long term, we'll have more in there, but right now it's just for first grade. So if you haven't tried a complex task in your classroom, I would really urge you to find the time, maybe in this math unit or in your next math unit, to test it out with your kids. And also note that you're probably going to need to try it more than once before you can decide if you like it, because it does take a little bit of time for kids to get used to that different style of math instruction and that different style of application of knowledge. As always, I am happy to connect with you. You can email me, you can DM me on Instagram, you can send me a text. I'm happy to get back to you. I'm happy to support you. I super love teaching math, and I would be happy to help you teach your teach complex tasks in your classroom. All right, teachers, until next week, 2 weeks from now, I hope that your coffee is strong and your lesson plans are dazzling. See ya.